It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin is known for a lot of things. Cheese, beer, the Packers, and ultra-rare fossils that have caught the attention of paleontologists from across the world.
The Thomas A. Green Geological Museum at UW-Milwaukee was recently designated a geological heritage geocollection, one of only 11 in the world, and we'll learn about this rare collection of fossils.
First, a Wisconsin paleontologist has named an ancient species of trilobite that is unique to and named after Waukesha. It's published in the most recent Journal of Paleontology.
Kenneth Chris Gass is a paleontologist and an honorary curator to the Department of Geology at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Chris, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Trilobites, the state fossil of Wisconsin, you have just named a new species, the Waukesha aspis eatoni. What went into this naming?
Well, the very first part of the name is Waukesha aspis, and that's the genus, which consists of several different species. But in this case, there's only one, and that species is eatoni. The Waukesha aspis is named, of course, after Waukesha, and that's the only place where this is found. And the species name eatoni is after Carrie Eaton from right here at UW in the Geology Museum. She's the curator and did so much for the research that I've done in this and in other aspects of the biota, that it just made perfect sense to name it after her.
You've known about this particular trilobite for quite some time now, but it has never been described. Why is that?
A combination of reasons, some of which I'm not even sure, but I used to be a trilobite researcher myself, a researcher, back in the 70s and 80s, and this was discovered in the 80s, but by that time I'd already gotten into other kinds of things. For whatever reason, there's just so much in the biota that it just got sort of put aside because it's a trilobite. And trilobites are fairly common as a whole. But what's not common is the rest of the stuff that's at the Waukesha biota, and that's the very rarely preserved soft parts and animals that normally don't get preserved at all. So you don't even know that they existed. So this is a very, very big discovery when it was first written up in 1985, and the trilobite was just sort of set aside until now.
So this specimen was collected from an area known as the Waukesha biota. Can you explain what the Waukesha biota is and why it's so significant?
Yeah, the first part of that, what it is, it's an assemblage of animals and other organisms that were alive. That is what a biota is. And the Waukesha biota is a specific one that lived only in Waukesha. What makes it so significant is that it is one of the few, something that's called a Konservat Lagerstätte, which is a German term, but it's used universally for place or an assemblage of fossils that is exceptionally preserved, where it preserves things that normally don't get preserved because it's normally hard parts. So Waukesha biota has soft parts, which, you know, have evaded preservation, evaded detection all this time. So now this is a window to the whole Silurian, this part of the Silurian period that we had never seen before. Instead of just shelly animals like clams and brachiopods and snails and things like that that have shells that fossilize easily, we're seeing skin, eyes, legs, internal organs in Waukesha, which is extremely rare.
Is the Waukesha biota putting Wisconsin on a map as, you know, a really significant place for paleontologists to pay attention to?
I would think that you could say 100% yes on that one. In my opinion, it's the first or second most significant fossil find in the state of Wisconsin. There are other things that are come close, but I would say that this is definitely one of the most significant fossil finds in the state of Wisconsin.
So when you go about naming a fossil and describing it, what are the characteristics of this trilobite? How did you describe it?
Well, like I said, I had a start in Silurian trilobites, the more conventional ones, the ones that didn't preserve any soft parts or whatever. Mm-hmm. This one does preserve the internal organs, well, at least the gut tract. But what it did was it focused me on, like I said, the fact that this hadn't been published since 1985 when it was first mentioned, but not described, not named, not diagnosed or compared with anything else. It was about time that somebody did that. And I was just kind of waiting because I had other things that I was doing. And finally, somebody from Argentina contacted me, a researcher out there who specializes in this family of trilobites. His name was Enrique Randolfi. And he said, would you like to do a paper on that? Because I find it very interesting, et cetera. So I said, okay, now is the time. Works out perfectly. So we just took it up. And what makes it different is that it's unusual for the family that it's in. It's not a particularly earth-shattering thing mm-hmm. in itself. But there are two things about it that are interesting to me. The abundance of it in some cases. I mean, there are complete specimens that are up to like 40-some or almost 50 specimens on one little area. The trilobites of this family normally have a spine in the back, and it's used normally for, we believe it was used for overturning the animal and some other things, like maybe digging. Well, this one is very different from that because unlike those in the family, this one has an indentation. That indentation, we believe, was used for respiration and possibly even as a little hole through which the antennae could stick through when it rolled up in a ball.
So it could roll up in a ball, but it could still breathe.
It could still breathe. That's an interesting adaptation that this animal had.
You have to do so much sleuthing in this type of work. And it leads me to wonder, why should we care so much what was happening 500 million years ago? How does that inform our modern times?
Change. Everything changes through time. And I've talked about this before, but it does remind us that everything can become extinct. And of course, you adapt to the environment, or if you don't, you don't make it. And this was one of the things that, of course, applies to us. It applies to every other species around us. And this species and the whole biota, actually, are lucky, very lucky that they were preserved for us. They were not so lucky for themselves, but they were lucky that we were able to find them because it was a very rare preservational environment.
Chris, where does your research take you next?
Well, right now I'm working on 3 or 4 different things. There's a great exposure of rocks out there with fossils called the Milwaukee Formation in Estabrook Park in Milwaukee. And I'm working right now on getting that, getting an international certification for that site. Another thing is, I don't know, I just keep on going, mostly focused on Wisconsin things. That's the most interesting thing to me. This is where I was brought up and raised and educated. And so I've just sort of taken a liking to these things. And one other thing, of course, I'm always going to be going back to is Blackberry Hill, which sort of rivals the Waukesha biota and its importance. It's extremely important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the update. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's great to be back.
We've been talking with paleontologist Kenneth Chris Gass, honorary curator for the Milwaukee Public Museum, about how Wisconsin has become a hub for rare fossils and the story behind a fossil he recently named the Waukesha Aspis edeni, published in the Journal of Paleontology. Now we turn to a geology museum in Milwaukee that recently received an international distinction for its fossil collection. Robert Graziano is academic program manager of the Department of Geosciences at UW-Milwaukee and chair of the Thomas A. Green Geological Museum Committee. Rob, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
So the museum has been designated as a geological heritage geocollection by the International Union of Geological Sciences. What is significant about this designation?
Yeah, we're very excited for this designation. This is recognizing this collection and its international significance to the global paleontology community. This has been a recognized collection in Milwaukee for a number of years, and now we're finally getting some attention for its international significance because the collection was collected at a significant time in the 1860s, 1890s, and in a specific location geographically in Milwaukee down to Chicago area. And that's what's got us this international designation because it's still an intact collection from this unique time period and this unique location.
So the 1860s to 1890s and the namesake of the museum, Thomas A. Green, who was he?
Yeah, Thomas Arnold Green was originally from Rhode Island, but he lived in Milwaukee and his occupation was a druggist of the day. He was owner of a number of things and companies, and he was a partner in the Green and Button Company. And one of the places that he owned was some quarries, and he was able to start collecting fossils from these quarries. And the rumor is he paid his workers to collect some fossils for him. And there was also a rumor that his doctor at one point told him to take up a hobby, and this became his hobby. And he's renowned now as a gentleman paleontologist of the era. He was not a trained paleontologist, but a local person who was interested in collecting local fossils and bartering and trading minerals from different locations.
What did he have a penchant for collecting? What did he love to collect?
Thomas Green collected fossils from the Milwaukee Formation and the Silurian formations of the Milwaukee area and Racine and down to Chicago. And he didn't just collect one specimen at a time. He collected many of the same population from the same location. And it's a set of fossils that allows us to study, for example, the whole population of some specific area. So there's a lot of repetition of, for example, the brachiopods that he collected, but there's an incredibly vast amount of samples, roughly 55,000 fossils and about 12,000 minerals that he bartered and traded with some of the premier mineral traders of the time in the 1800s.
And these holdings are of the, you know, some of the greatest collections of the Silurian reef fossils, I understand. Can you tell us about this reef and the Silurian fossils?
Sure. There is some reefs identified in the Milwaukee area, in particular one in Wauwatosa called the Schoonmaker Reef, that was recognized as the first Silurian reef, maybe in all of North America, but maybe in all of the world. And it was recognized by some paleontologists of the day, notably James Hall. They came here to identify the structures in this reef and found out that the fossils from this area represented a reef that would be similar to reefs that we see in shallow marine environments today. So that reef right here in Milwaukee is recognized as the first one identified in the paleontological record from that era. And that's what makes it so significant.
How did Green go about collecting these fossils?
Green went to some of these locations himself, and then he had some people with him that would collect them, but he also had the connection of having some people working at the quarries that were able to collect them for him. And when you think of quarrying now, today, we tend to blast and then crunch and grind up rocks to 2-inch or 1-inch size that we need. But back in the day, a lot of that blasting occurred, but then the rocks were broken apart manually with manual labor in the way that some of the workers would have been able to see and recognize these fossils. This is not a process that's done today, and that's why, partly why it's recognized as an irreplaceable collection.
How does this collection then really help to tell our story, the geological story of Wisconsin and the greater Midwest?
This collection is really significant to the Midwest because it's telling the story of the limestones and dolostones of this area, and in particular, the Niagara series of dolostones throughout the Midwest that go all the way to Ontario, but they encompass Indiana and Ohio. And this region was, the fossils tell us about the rocks of this region, which indicate that we, in Wisconsin, were in a shallow marine environment about 400 million years ago, meaning the land that is now Wisconsin was underwater, accumulating sediments in an area south of the equator at about 420 million years ago.
And you've been maintaining and overseeing this collection for over two decades. How has managing the collection changed over the years, and what has evolved? What have you learned?
Yeah, what's interesting is this collection was maintained as a museum when it was donated in 1911 by the Green descendants of Thomas Arnold Green. And it was kind of displayed as more of a museum in the Thomas A. Green Memorial Building until about the 1990s. And in that time, it was moved over to Lapham Hall in UWM, and it's more in a gallery or presentation room. So managing the collection has been really overseeing the gallery and the student staffing. So it's not maintained per se like a museum where we have researchers working on it all the time. That hasn't happened since the 80s. And now with this designation, we feel this, we can turn the corner and do more with this collection and have research and outreach and activities with the collection.
And you also are in the effort of digitizing the fossil collection. What would that allow?
Yeah, we about 5 years ago, we got a grant from the IMLS, Institute of Museum and Library Studies, and that allowed us to digitize about a quarter of the specimens of this collection. But the grant ended and the funding ended, and we would still like to do that. And we would, if we could do that, we could distribute this collection, let's say, through the internet and allow paleontology research from around the world to take advantage of these drawers and drawers of fossils that we have. On a side note, I've been down in the collection on and off for 20 years. And every time I show a visitor the collection, I open a drawer and I say, there's dissertations and thesis is waiting to happen. And I open drawers for 20 years now that every time I swear I open a new drawer that I haven't seen, there's that many fossils.
Oh, wow. So there are definitely aha moments here and opportunities for researchers the world over to make progress and to really have a deeper knowledge of paleontology.
Yeah, exactly. And that is obviously our hope with the fossils themselves, and our hope with the broader community is to just educate the public about the fossils, what they mean to geologic history, what they mean to geology in general and the study of geology, because there's so many specimens that never see the light of day. There is really now so little viewers and visitors here that we hope to be able to show off this collection much more. And we haven't been able to do that. And now we feel we are turning a corner in this last year.
Part of that education of the public is hosting events. You host Darwin Day events, and you have one coming up?
Yeah, we are now going to be on our fourth annual Darwin Day coming up February 15th of 2025. We'll have a Saturday event from 10 to 3 for the community, a free event. At that event, we bring in lots of partners. So we have people from the Wisconsin Geological Society, Carroll Moraine Geological Society, Milwaukee Public Museum, and we set up about 20 tables throughout two buildings. And people can come in and they will absolutely learn something. All ages will learn something and they'll have fun. And the kids will leave a lot of little swag, some rocks and some drawings and things, and maybe some jewelry. But it's just a fun science event to raise awareness for this, for natural sciences in general, but to showcase this unique collection.
Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Kate.
That was Rob Graziano, Academic Program Manager of the Department of Geosciences at UW-Milwaukee and Chair of the Thomas A. Green Geological Museum Committee. He was with us to talk about the museum's recent designation as a geological heritage geocollection, so far the only of its kind in the U.S. And earlier, we heard from Wisconsin paleontologist Kenneth Chris Gass about naming the Waukesha Aspis eatoni. That's a new name for an ancient fossil, and why our state is such a treasure trove for fossil preservation.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, stand-up comedians from Green Bay and Janesville talk about the comedy scene in the state and how they keep audiences laughing.
You know, I wouldn't do the same set that I would do in Crivitz, Wisconsin for Madison, right?
The View from Inside Wisconsin Stand-Up, that's next on WPR News.